Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is Now or Never. And we're going through the notes, Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention, where these men argued back and forth. And it took a long time. And as I said on Monday, it is just a miracle and amazing how, as you look at the dialogue and how they went back and forth, how they came to an agreement on what was to be, you know, how they slowly developed this thing called the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, when we get into August, we'll see that they're still maintaining these multiple articles of 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 13 and beyond. I think that they were looking at like 20 articles. So the fact that they took all of that and was able to condense it all into 7 articles by September 17th is just amazing. Anyway, Paul, welcome back. And
hey, thank you.
I'm happy to have you. And so we left off with, I believe, this is right. Mr. Bedford of Delaware.
Right in the middle of Mr. Bedford's comments.
Right. So let me kind of create the prelude to what you're going to read to hear such language with emotion. Because what he says here, but is there not an apology in what was said by Mr. Morris? Because, you know, Mr. Morris was talking about the big states and the small states, right?
Right.
And he made it seem like, you know, that we were going to be divided and all of this. And he goes by Mr. Gorham that Delaware must be annexed. And I think he mislabeled that because it was Mr. Morris. He had that right. Is to unite by Mr. Gorham that Delaware must be annexed to Pennsylvania and New Jersey divided between Pennsylvania and New York. In other words,
why did you say that?
Because we've missed some of the dialogues, but don't forget the famous statement, and I think it was Mr. Gorham that said, "We don't trust you big states. Mm-hmm. You're going to take away, you know, our sovereignty. You're going to just consume us." Right. And that's what they were trying to preserve the people that were staying there. And so they were talking in this grand scheme of, you know, uniting. And Governor Morris actually was talking in the greater scale of actually maybe creating a singular government in the big mm-hmm. scale of things. So anyway. So they go on. Let's finish with Mr. Bedford.
Where I left off was to hear such.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. To hear such language without emotion would be to renounce the feelings of a man and the duty of a citizen as to the propositions of the committee. The lesser states have thought it necessary to have a security somewhere. This has been thought necessary for the executive magistrate, there's that word, of the proposed government, who has a sort of negative on the laws, and is it not of more importance that the state should be protected than that the executive branch of the government should be protected? In order to obtain this, the smaller states have conceded as to the constitution of the first branch and as to money bills, if they be not gratified by correspondent concessions as to the second branch, as it to be supposed they will ever accede to the plan, and what will be the consequence if nothing should be done? The condition of the United States requires that something should be immediately done. It would be better that an effective plan should be adopted than that none should be recommended. He saw no reason why defects might not be supplied by meetings 10, 15, or 20 years hence. And I haven't been with you for the last few weeks in this discussion. So this is really big states versus small states. This is the big argument here.
Yep.
And I take it this is suffrage. All right. They've
yes.
agreed to the smaller house, but when they're looking at representation by population, understandably the smaller states are uncomfortable. they feel like they're going to get run over by
yes.
the bigger states.
Yeah, so okay, so the, yeah. the Articles of Confederation had two really big problems. The one problem that was just absolutely unacceptable was the full unanimous decision. In other words, it required everybody to vote, because if one state voted against, it was dead.
Mm-hmm.
They had to have that unanimous approval. So the one thing that they did change was, instead of it being unanimous, it became 3/4. That was the end product. And that was
right.
the reason why the small states, because the small states knew at this point in time
mm-hmm.
that the small states were, you know, 7-6.
Okay.
And so as we look at the small states, as far as population goes, you know, they had the security, but at this point in time, everything being incestuous, because again, the concept was that the second branch was created by the first. And so, in other words, it would all be driven by the will of the people and no real checks to, you know, so there was no check to maintain state sovereignty. That over time, that, you know, all they needed was to basically corrupt or to have the will of both houses, the first and the second house, be towards a democracy to basically annihilate the smaller states.
Okay, so that's where the mindset is at the moment, that the second house would be chosen by the first house.
Yeah, and that okay. word democracy is the undertone that is not mentioned in detail here.
Mm-hmm.
But it becomes the standard. When people realize the power that they have through these pieces to obtain mm-hmm. greater control, because when you create government, the first thing it starts doing is exercising control.
And that's the nature of the beast.
You have to, you know, when you create government, that means you're creating some level of control. The second thing that government does is it tries to aggrandize or grow its control.
Mm-hmm.
It is in the nature of government to ultimately exceed its control, the boundaries of its control, so it can control and control and control and control. And so that's one of the reasons why Madison basically stated that, you know, hey, in this whole design, we had to create, you know, we had to actually create the government. And in so doing, we had to give it the power necessary, but we also had to maintain checks, you know, so that it would stay within those powers.
Okay.
And so anyway, and these men had no idea the level of checks that actually are within the Constitution. And they were still at this thought of, you know, debating concepts. This was all theoretical
sure.
of what they were presenting. Anyway, so Mr. Ellsworth, who actually became an Anti-Federalist, stated this.
Okay. Mr. Ellsworth of Connecticut said he had not attended the proceedings of the committee, but was ready to accede to the compromise they had reported. Some compromise was necessary, and he saw none more convenient or reasonable.
Ah, okay. So he being a part of a small state, he seemed mm-hmm. like he was on board with this kind of control thing. Mm-hmm. And so go Mr. Williamson of North Carolina. Now,
okay,
North Carolina happened to be a large state.
Right. Mr. Williamson, North Carolina, hoped that the expressions of individuals would not be taken for the sense of their colleagues, much less of their states, which is not and could not be known. He hoped also that the meaning of those expressions would not be misconstrued or exaggerated. He did not conceive that Mr. Gouverneur Morris meant that the sword ought to be drawn against the smaller states. He only pointed out the probable consequences of anarchy in the USA. Similar exposition ought to be given of the expressions of Mr. Gorham. He was ready to hear the report discussed, but thought the propositions contained in it the most objectionable of any he had yet heard.
Right. Okay. Wow. So obviously, everybody's still tasting the porridge doesn't have enough sugar.
Okay.
But one of the things that I think is interesting, because how many people today really look at the United States, or I should say this republic, as a capital USA? I mean, there's lots of patriot groups. The sovereign citizen movement demands a little USA.
Right.
And here these men are actually using USA as an actual United States instead of the term of Confederation. Now, again, remember that the way things were moving into this Constitution, and at this point in time, they were creating a very strong central government.
Okay.
All right.
At this point in
time. At this point in time, yes.
Okay. So we're at Mr. Patterson of New Jersey, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, New Jersey, said that he had, when the report was agreed to in the committee, reserved to himself the right of freely discussing it. He acknowledged that the warmth complained of was improper, but he thought the sword and the gallows as little calculated to produce conviction. He complained of the manner in which Mr. M. and Mr. Gouverneur Morris had treated the small states.
Okay, interesting. And so Mr. M. probably being himself and Gouverneur Morris. But
Mr. Madison?
Yeah, Mr. Madison.
Okay.
But, you know, because there's probably quite a few M's there. I'd have to go through the list. I only know of Mason off the top, right?
Yeah,
but anyway,
I think he may be referring to himself.
Yeah, because this was his plan in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is he actually complained about Governor Morris himself.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, anyway, okay. So Mr. Gary, anti-federalist, or a non-signer of the Constitution, he's up next.
Okay, Mr. Gary of Massachusetts. Though he had assented to the report in the committee, he had very material objections to it. We were, however, in a particular situation. We were neither the same nation nor different nations. We ought not, therefore, to pursue the one or the other of these ideas too closely. If no compromise should take place, what will be the consequence? A secession he foresaw would take place, for some gentlemen seemed decided on it. Two different plans will be proposed, and the result no man could foresee. If we do not come to some agreement among ourselves, some foreign sword will probably do the work for us. All right, so there was a real concern that we had to get this right, or else we're going to be overrun.
Yes, they knew that they couldn't trust the monarchs of Europe.
Right.
And they were creating a government that would be the end of monarchies.
Okay.
Because go ahead.
I wonder how the monarchs of Europe felt about this new brand of government. I've wondered that for years, because it is antithetical to this concept of the divine right of kings.
Yes, absolutely correct. So as we, you know, kind of look at the monarchical view, they were seeing America as this godless bastion of anarchy and chaos that the morals of America would be wide open to, you know, these debasement, you know, be able to just, you know, go off the deep end. However, the opposite occurred. By the end of the 18th century, we saw Europe rapidly abandoning Christianity, where the churches of Europe, throughout Europe, became actually empty.
Wow.
And why was that? Because of the effect because the monarch, as I've said before in Why Counties Matter Most, these nations were throughout Europe, and Britain specifically, because my focus was on Britain, that was a theocratic monarchy. And, you know, the desire of people to be able to take their religious perspectives down a different path, you know, it's not good when government is married to religion in a theocratic way. It's one thing to have a relationship with religion, but it, you know, an open relationship with all religions, but it's another thing to be theocratic, which I think actually people started realizing that there was this corruption between the two, their government and the government's religion. I mean, John Locke started in the late 17th century, you know, wrote the two treatises of government. I got it right that time. And, you know, as, you know, I usually struggle with that. But anyway, he points out how the how unrighteous these theocracies were. Anyway, so let's go into what George Mason, who is also an anti-federalist, but, I, you know, again, it's still early in the convention. Go ahead.
Mr. Mason of Virginia. The report was meant not as specific propositions to be adopted, but merely as a general ground of recommend accommodation. There must be some accommodation on this point, or we shall make a little further progress in the work. Accommodation was the object of the House in the appointment of the committee and of the committee in the report they had made. And however liable the report might be to objections, he thought it preferable to an appeal to the world by the different sides, as he had been talked of by some gentlemen. It could not be more inconvenient to any gentleman to remain absent from his private affairs than it was for him, but he would bury his bones in this city rather than expose his country to the consequences of a dissolution of the convention without anything being done. Wow.
Okay, keep going.
The first proposition in the report for fixing the representation in the first branch, one member for every 40,000 inhabitants, being taken up.
And there you go. So they've already called that number, and that's the number they settled on.
Okay.
But, you know, here's a pretty good view that George Mason wanted, and maybe Mr. M was Mason.
Okay.
Because Mason seems like he was a part of that committee, and he seems like he's defending what the committee was doing. And he clearly basically said, you know, I would rather bury my bones than leave without having a commitment here.
Right.
Right.
I mean, it's like he's, I'm a busy guy, but I'll die here before I leave.
Right.
Without a commitment. That's a wow.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the next one is property. Property.
Well, it's a continuation. This is all just a continuation. Keep going.
Morris, and we're talking about property.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Objected to that scale of appointment. He thought property ought to be taken into the estimate as well as the number of inhabitants. Huh. Okay. So this is representation, and he's thinking that property should be involved in selecting representation. That's what he's saying here.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Life and liberty were generally said to be of more value than property. An accurate view of the matter would nevertheless prove that property was the main object of society. The savage state was more favorable to liberty than the civilized, and sufficiently so to life. It was preferred by all men who had not acquired a taste for property. It was only renounced for the sake of property, which could only be secured by the restraints of regular government. These ideas might appear to some new, but they were nevertheless just. If property then was the main object of government, certainly it ought to be one measure of the influence due to those who were to be affected by the government. He looked forward also to that range of new states which would soon be formed in the West.
The first time they really started looking, because remember, Governor Morris was talking about this grander view, and he was actually injecting this concept of new states. Go ahead.
Okay. He thought the rule of representation ought to be so fixed as to secure to the Atlantic states a prevalence in the national councils. The new states will know less of the public interest than these, will have an interest in many respects different, in particular will be little scrupulous of involving the community in wars, the burdens and operations of which would fall chiefly on the maritime states. provision ought therefore to be made to prevent the maritime states from being hereafter outvoted by them. He thought this might be easily done by irrevocably fixing the number of representatives which the Atlantic states should respectively have, and the number which each state will have. This would not be unjust, as the Western settlers would previously know the conditions on which they were to possess their lands. It would be politic, as it would recommend the plan to the present as well as future interest of the states, which must decide the fate of it. Let me ask.
So here he's actually throwing out, almost regurgitating the British perspective.
Okay. I might need some help understanding that. But what it sounds like what he's saying here is that, and this is their concept of, this is their paradigm of the times, which is way
different. This was his paradigm. This was the first time this has actually been thrown out. New states. Okay.
Right. So new states. And what he's saying is, because of the way the world worked then, the maritime states would be more likely to feel the effects of war.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they should, if I'm understanding him correctly, they're bearing a higher burden than the inland states.
Yep. That's okay. What he's saying. And he's making an argument to say that their conditions in joining the Union they won't have equal footing, that they will be diminished just due to the fact that, you know, they have, you know, they're going to be blessed by the extra security that the coastal states are going to provide them. Mm-hmm. And the coastal states will need to have, you know, the greater control over that central government to ensure, because what could happen if all of a sudden you had the interior states that were equally populated as the coastal states and say, you know, we want these types of goods, we want these types of compromises at their demise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So I understand. I'm impressed that I understood that. Thanks for clearing that.
That's okay. So Mr. Rutledge then actually says
Mr.
this.
Rutledge,
go ahead.
South Carolina. The gentleman last up had spoken some of his sentiments precisely. Property was certainly the principal object of society. If numbers should be made the rule of representation, the Atlantic states will be subjected to the Western. He moved that the first proposition in the report be postponed in order to take up the following, viz., quote, that the suffrages of the several states be regulated and proportioned according to the sums to be paid towards the general revenue by the inhabitants of each state respectively, that an apportionment of suffrages according to the ratio aforesaid shall be made and regulated at the end of so many, you know, blank years from the first meeting of the legislature of the United States, and at the end of every blank years, but that for the present and until the period above mentioned, the suffrages shall be for New Hampshire, blank, Massachusetts, blank. Okay. I think
right.
I see what he's saying.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He's asking for specification.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And so we're going to kind of skip over some of this. I mean, folks, I would just recommend reading all of it, but we're going to skip over this and we'll go down to Mr. King. Where Mr. King actually starts talking about property again, They start really diving into and, you know, dissecting this little problem of property representation, taxation, you know, new states. Go ahead.
Okay, so Mr. King of Massachusetts wished the clause to be committed chiefly in order to detach it from the report with which it had no connection. He thought also that the ratio of representation proposed could not be safely fixed, since in a century and a half, our computed increase of population would carry the number of representatives to an enormous excess, that ye number of inhabitants...
Okay, so hold on quick. Let's just stop right there because we're going into
all right.
Break. I wasn't keeping track of time. But when we come back, we will kind of pick it up in since in a half century... at that point. So anyway, folks, This is very interesting, but the whole point of this is the importance and the center of property in how they started arguing and coming to the conclusions of what was best. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I'm sorry about that unannounced interruption. But anyway,
okay.
So Mr. King was basically, you know, diving and trying to dissect further the ratio of representation. And so go ahead. If you want to start all over from the beginning, because there's only a couple lines, so go ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead and do that. So Mr. King of Massachusetts wished the clause to be committed chiefly in order to detach it from the report with which it had no connection. He thought also that the ratio of representation proposed could not be safely fixed, since in a century and a half, our computed increase of population would carry the number of representatives to an enormous excess, that the number of inhabitants was not the proper index of ability and wealth, that property was the primary object of society, and that in fixing a ratio, this ought not to be excluded from the estimate. With regard to new states, he observed that there was something peculiar in the business which had not been noticed. The United States were now admitted to be proprietors of the country northwest of Ohio. Congress, by one of their ordinances, have impolitically laid it out into 10 states and have made it a fundamental article of compact with those who may become settlers, that as soon as the number in any one state shall equal that of the smallest of the 13 original states, it may claim admission into the Union. Delaware does not contain, it is computed, more than 35,000 souls, and for obvious reasons will not increase much more a considerable time. It is possible, then, that if this plan be persisted in Congress, 10 new votes may be added without a greater addition of inhabitants than are represented by the single vote of Pennsylvania. The plan as it respects one of the new states is already irrevocable, the sale of the lands having commenced, and the purchasers and sellers will immediately become entitled to all the privileges of the compact.
Right, so he's referencing the movement of the Northwest Ordinance, because the Northwest Ordinance actually gets passed by Continental Congress the following month, of the signing of the Constitution in October. In other words, the Congress passes the Northwest Ordinance in basically making a compact that the Northwest Territory is going to be basically affixed to these 10 states and the way they were laid out. Well, guess what? Well, I've already covered this in the past couple of weeks. The Northwest Ordinance, by the ratification of the Constitution, the Northwest Ordinance is superseded. And now Congress doesn't have, you know, these particulars of what it takes to admit a state into the Union. And I think they actually started going down the path of, ultimately, by the time Wyoming was joining, they needed 60,000 people in a state to create a state. And so, anyway, you know, here is a voice of reason that's actually saying, hey, you know, we've already got a problem because they're already having this conversation and property. And one of the things he didn't mention, you know, as this, I'll say, conundrum by Mr. Butler is this position on slaves. I mean, he basically said that property is very important, but he wanted to make sure that, you know, that these new states would be joining the union. What he didn't say was they would be probably leaning towards, they'd have a high probability of not being slave states.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, lacking slavery. So Mr. Pinckney of South Carolina then stands up.
Okay. Mr. Pinckney, South Carolina, saw no good reason for committing. The value of land had been found in full investigation to be an impracticable rule. The contributions of revenue, including imports and exports, must be too changeable in their amount, too difficult to be adjusted, and too injurious to the non-commercial states. The number of inhabitants appeared to him the only just and practicable rule. He thought the blacks ought to stand on an equality with whites, but would agree to the ratio settled by Congress. He continued that Congress had no right under the Articles of Confederation to authorize the admission of new states, no such case having been provided for. I want to make a comment here.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Pinckney says he thought that blacks ought to stand on an equality with whites. Well, that was for their suffrage for the state with the whites, but not for the equality
right.
for the blacks.
Right. He was not actually speaking that blacks were even human beings.
Right.
They were property, but they wanted to count them as a part of their population.
Right.
In other words, they wanted to continue to insult them as slaves, but they wanted the world to look at them as if, they have suffrage. This all gets shaken out. I think you're going to actually find, as we kind of go through this, how they actually start exposing this, and they actually start talking about this three-fifths rule and how, you know, that's just not going to fly. And ultimately it did. But go ahead.
Okay.
Keep in mind that he was the first one to actually bring in blacks, not calling them slaves, but, you know, the gentleman before, Mr. Butler, South Carolina, Mr. Pinckney, South Carolina. Now, Mr. Davy, North Carolina. It's almost boom, 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 right? Okay. So
right.
What does Mr. Davy say?
I want to make a point to understand that I've been busy, but I want to be in the broadcast when you do this three-fifths debate.
Well, this is what's coming up.
Okay.
So anyway.
All right. So this is we're in Mr. Davy in North Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Was for committing the clause in order to get at the merits of the question arising on the report. He seemed to think that the wealth or property ought to be represented in the second branch and numbers in the first branch. On the motion for committing as made by Mr. Gouverneur Morris, Mass A. Kant. Oh, okay. Massachusetts, aye. Connecticut, aye. New York, no. New Jersey, no. Pennsylvania, aye. Delaware, no. Maryland, divided. Virginia, aye. North Carolina, aye. South Carolina, aye. Georgia, aye. This is 1-2. The motion carried. The members approved by ballot were Mr. Gouverneur Morris, Mr. Gorham, Mr. Randolph, Mr. Rutledge, and Mr. King. So did they create a committee?
So starting it off, he says, was for committing the clause in order to get at the merits of the question arising on the report. He mm-hmm. seemed to think that wealth and property ought to be represented in the second branch. Again, the aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the plantation owners. And numbers in the first branch. On the motion for committing as made by Mr. Governor Morris, and we went up further when Governor Morris said we need to jump into this, and we need to have mm-hmm. these, you know, a deeper conversation, so we need to actually, you know, bring this out so that we can talk about it. And so committing it, they basically, if you count it all up, there were what, three no's and the rest were ayes. So
right.
it carried. And so the members appointed by ballot for going into this committee to, you know, to dive into this was Mr. Governor Morris, Mr. Gorham. And now Governor Morris is of, you know, Pennsylvania. Mr. Gorham, I believe he was Connecticut, but maybe not. Mr. Gorham, Nathaniel Gorham of Massachusetts.
Okay.
And then Mr. Randolph of Virginia and Mr. Rutledge and Mr. King. Mr. King being Massachusetts and Mr. Rutledge being South Carolina. So you had one, possibly two slave state defenders, mm-hmm. and you had Morris, Gorham, and King, three, so it was 3-2.
Okay.
But I honestly believe Randolph was not really a defender of the slave state.
Okay.
Even though he was the governor of Virginia at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next part that we're going to dive into, we got to go down a ways.
Mr. Williamson?
Yes, yeah, of North Carolina, correct.
Okay, Mr. Williamson, North Carolina, speaks on property. Thought it would be necessary to return to the rule of numbers, but that the Western states stood on different footing. If their property shall be rated as high as that of the Atlantic states, then their representation ought to hold a like proportion. Otherwise, if their property was not to be equally rated. Mr. Governor Morris, Pennsylvania, the report is little more than a guess. Wealth is not altogether disregarded by the committee, where it was apparently in favor of one state whose numbers were superior to the numbers of another by a fraction only. A member extraordinary was allowed to the former, and so vice versa. The committee meant little more than to bring the matter to a point for the consideration of the House. What's going on there?
So they're basically just talking about this report. They didn't read the we're not reading the report. This is kind of just the discussion of what has come out. And so what you can see is Mr. Williamson thought it would be necessary to return to the rule of numbers by what the Western states would stand on different footing. Mm-hmm. If their property shall be rated as high as that of the Atlantic states. Okay, so that's kind of going back to that. New states and property. See, mm-hmm. Regardless of how you bake this, whenever you use the word property, there is the land, the real estate, and then the holdings. Mm-hmm. So they looked at a person of a large plantation with lots of slaves holding more property than just the land.
Right.
That's how they were assessing. Remember during the Articles of Confederation, they wanted to amend the Articles of Confederation to obtain more taxation based on the value of property, and that value of property would be increased significantly because of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now they're looking, and they want, and these men are trying to make sure that they're protecting their interests of these states, the southern states. Even though it's, you know, hey, we want to make sure, because they're not going to have the same property as we are.
Right.
And that is that's not being mentioned here. It's almost like they're playing very politically correct.
Okay.
Okay. So this is a very, very delicate dance because mm-hmm. they already know that they still have this conflict of freeing the slaves or not. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't made the final as the House or the Committee of the Whole, everybody at the convention, they still have not laid out, this is the final decision, we're getting rid of slaves.
Right.
Okay.
All right, so we're at Mr. Reed of Delaware asked why Georgia was allowed two members when her number of inhabitants had stood below that of Delaware.
That's true. And so because of the slaves and the perceived value of those plantations over Delaware. Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Hang on a minute. I'm picturing this. So Georgia, when the number stood. Okay. So the number of white inhabitants in Georgia was less than Delaware, but Mr. Reed is pointing out that they have two members in this House. So, correct?
Yeah, so as I see Georgia, they had basically, at the time, the actual population was 59,096, and same with Delaware.
Wow.
But
okay.
Delaware was getting an extra, or Georgia was getting an extra representative.
But it sounds like they had the same. Okay, help me. I want to make sure, help my confusion, because you just told me that they both had the same population.
Yes.
Okay.
Why was Georgia getting two instead of one?
Okay, right. Okay.
All right.
So, Mr. Gouverneur Morris of Pennsylvania, such is the rapidity of the population of that state that before the plan takes effect, it will probably be entitled to two representatives. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
Mr. Randolph of Virginia disliked the report of the committee but had been unwilling to object to it. He was apprehensive that as the number was not to be changed till the national legislature should please, a pretext would never be wanting to postpone alterations and keep the power in the hands of those possessed of it. He was in favor of the commitment to a member from each state. That
right.
sounds like state suffrage.
Right. Keep right. going. But they're not talking okay. about, I don't know if they're talking the second body or, you know, the Senate, what we call the Senate. So okay. Mr. Patterson of New Jersey
is picking up again and he's mm-hmm. talking about property. Mr. Patterson, New Jersey, considered the proposed estimate for the future according to the combined rule of numbers and wealth as too vague. For this reason, New Jersey was against it. He could regard Negroes, slaves, in no light but as property. Now, this is New Jersey? Okay.
Uh-huh.
They are no free agents, have no personal liberty, no faculty of acquiring property, but on the contrary are themselves property, and like other property, entirely at the will of the master. Has a man in Virginia a number of votes in proportion to the number of his slaves? And if Negroes are not represented in the states to which they belong, why should they be represented in the general government? What is the true principle of representation? It is an expedient by which an assembly of certain individuals chosen by the people is substituted in place of the inconvenient meeting of the people themselves. If such a meeting of the people is actually to take place, would the slaves vote? They would not. Why then should they be represented? He was also against such an indirect encouragement of the slave trade, observing that Congress, in their act relating to the change of the 8th Article of Confederation, had been ashamed to use the term slaves and had substituted a description. So,
right. Okay, so this is actually one of the first times somebody speaks frankly.
Right. I was going to point that out myself. Mr. Patterson just calls them out right then.
Right.
Right?
Uh-huh.
All right. So Mr. Madison of Virginia reminded Mr. Patterson that his doctrine of representation, which was in its principle the genuine one, must forever silence the pretensions of the small states to an equality of votes with the large ones. They ought to vote in the same proportion in which their citizens would do if the people of all the states were collectively met. He suggested as a proper ground of compromise that in the first branch, the states should be represented according to the number of free inhabitants, and in the second, which had for one of its primary objects the guardianship of property according to the whole number, including slaves.
Okay. Right. So
help me explain what Madison is saying.
Well, but basically what Madison is saying is what I was telling you. That they perceived the value of certain people. Because who voted? Who voted?
Who voted?
Do not misconstrue our elections today with how they voted back in their day.
Back in their day?
Mm-hmm.
free white men voted in elections.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe free white landholders.
Well, no.
No?
Only landholders willing to pay the poll tax were allowed to vote.
Hmm.
Ah, now this is very contrary to how we think today with democracy being instituted in America.
Okay.
So in other words, when they're talking about that landholder that has the money to pay for his poll tax,
mm-hmm.
he gets to vote.
You know what? Let me back up some. Let me mm-hmm. add something here.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of people don't know that there were black landholders and black slave owners.
Okay? That is true.
And I don't know if their ability to vote went this far back. Okay. Maybe not. Okay. But they would have been willing to pay the poll tax if they were landowners and slaveholders.
Absolutely. And they did vote in the ratification debates, and they did vote in the federal representation elections. And that actually became perceived in even the northern states as problematic.
For black landholders and
correct.
Slave owners to be able to do that. Okay.
Absolutely. I point this out in Why Counties Matter Most, that mm-hmm. it wasn't until the 1800s, you know, after about a decade or two, the northern states said, you know what, we need to start denying these blacks the freedom to vote.
The northern states were saying this?
Absolutely. The state of New York and every state. So the only state that was consistently denying blacks the right to vote, freeman blacks with property, willing to pay the property tax, were denied to vote in Georgia. The stand of a property tax or a poll tax was, you know, a part of the way things were until, what was it? It wasn't the 16th Amendment. Was it the 20th? The 19th was women. I think the poll tax was taken away in the 20-something.
Right.
One
of those. In fact, it may have been it may have been the 25th. I had just referred to that. Like
the 1970 amendment for the 18-year-old is what it was the final change of the election process. The poll tax was before that, and I think the poll tax was somewhere around the civil rights era. So it was about a couple decades. So my point is the poll tax and those types of things were a standard process in many states. Prior to that amendment, yeah.
Yeah, the 24th Amendment.
And when was that ratified?
It doesn't say that.
See, my color-coded constitution tells me proposed in 62 and ratified in 64. So there are people that are alive today that had no idea that during their lifetime, people had to pay a tax
mm-hmm.
or a fee to vote.
Right.
Okay.
That's interesting.
It is. It's very interesting. But anyway,
yeah.
So we're actually seeing, so one of the things I'd like to tell you is, I know you want explanations, but let's read the dialogue and over the course of the next couple, you know, maybe the week, it'll expose itself of how everything plays out, because even though a person makes a stand and we kind of close the day, doesn't mean that's the final matter or that's the final conclusion on the matter.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They still have, you still have 3/4 of this document to go. So they're not done yet.
By far.
Yeah.
And so the next time we kind of jump into this is with property and representation is by Governor Morris in Pennsylvania, and it's on July 10th.
I'm there.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Governor Morris, Pennsylvania, regretted the turn of the debate. The states, he found, had many representatives on the floor. Few, he fears, were to be deemed the representatives of America. He thought the southern states have, by the report, more than their share of representation. Property ought to have its weight, but not all the weight, if the southern states are to supply money. The northern states are to spill their blood. Besides, the probable revenue to be expected from the southern states has been greatly overrated. He was against reducing New Hampshire. Okay.
So does that give you Governor Morris's position on slavery?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Randolph of Virginia was opposed to reduction of New Hampshire. What is this reduction of New Hampshire? Can I?
So they wanted to reduce New Hampshire so that, so going to the population, right? New Hampshire, where are they? New Hampshire was 141,000.
Okay.
That's how many citizens were there. Instead of, so in other words, they wanted to reduce them because the southern states had been arguing and arguing and arguing that our property value is more, we pay for more, we have more money than you. And so we're going to end up paying most of this. We should have the representation. This kind of goes back to the whole, this concept of taxation without representation. They wanted proportional representation to what they were going to be taxed for.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, Mr. Randolph of Virginia was opposed to reduction of New Hampshire, not because she had a full title to three members, but because it was in his contemplation, one, to make it the duty instead of leaving it in the discretion of the legislature to regulate the representation by a periodical census. Two, to require more than a bare majority of votes in the legislature in certain cases, and particularly in commercial cases. On the question for reducing New Hampshire from 3 to 2 representatives, it passed in the negative. Okay, and it, you know, Mass no, Connecticut no, New Jersey no, Pennsylvania no, Delaware no, Maryland no, Virginia no, North Carolina aye, South Carolina aye, Georgia no. So North Carolina and South Carolina wanted to reduce New Hampshire.
That's right, because they felt that they deserved more weight. They had more money. They were going to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Yeah. So.
Now, General Pinckney, South Carolina. Let's go. I mean, as we go through this, there's going to be a few motions. Go ahead.
Okay. So, General Pinckney, South Carolina, Mr. Alexander Martin, North Carolina, moved that 6 reps instead of 5 be allowed to North Carolina. On the question, passed in the negative. Mass, no. Connecticut, no. New Jersey, no. Pennsylvania, no. Delaware, no. Maryland, no. Virginia, no. North Carolina, aye. South Carolina, aye. Georgia, aye. Okay. So
it's they're speaking of their interests. They're right. All trying to bolster themselves up. These were the slave states. Right there you see the slave states.
Right. Okay. General Pinckney, South Carolina, Mr. Butler, South Carolina, made the motion. The same motion in favor of South Carolina. The question passed in the negative. Same votes. Everyone except North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia said aye.
In this case, Delaware actually said aye.
Oh, where? I missed that.
That's okay. Aye. But it wasn't enough.
Okay.
So Delaware kind of, you know, you got to remember Delaware. It was a slave state. It was a quasi. I mean, you know, you still can drive through Delaware today and still see cotton.
Wow! Hang on. So wait a minute. But they're voting to reduce the representation for North Carolina. So why would they want their representation reduced?
No. They were actually seeking an increase. So sorry, we ran out of time. Perfect timing, though. In between this, they were actually North Carolina and South Carolina were seeking increases. And that was the whole gist of all of this. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And I'm hoping you're really garnering how these discussions help us understand the paradigm that was involved in the design of this Constitution.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.